Hello, and welcome to the nicest episode of Must See Matches, episode 69. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me as always is the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckley. Mark, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Tremendous. I'm going to make no secret of this. Today, we are going to be talking about my favourite match of all time. When I was putting together my list, this one was a no-brainer. I didn't even have to think about it. It went on the list. It is the only Toriumon entry, Shin M2K versus Dofixer versus Crazy Max versus Italian Connection from day 16 of the Verano Peligroso Dos Tour at Corican Hall on August the 30th, 2003. You'll know it as the Crazy 12-Man Four-Way. And we have, in our guest seat, the only person we could call upon to come and talk about this match with us, the English language voice of Dragon Gate and a fountain of knowledge of all things Dragon System, Jay is here. Jay, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Marvellous. I am going to give you the same questions I give everybody when they make their first appearance on this show. So Prepare yourself for a mini interview. How did you get into wrestling in the first place?
I got into wrestling in between WrestleMania 1 and WrestleMania 2. I remember seeing the Hogan Bundy angle live. My aunt was generally my babysitter when I was, this was 85, 86, maybe 7, 8 years old. My aunt was my babysitter, and her boyfriend at the time was a VHS piracy enthusiast. So he would go to, there was like near his house, there was a little VHS rental shop. This is, so again, 85, 86. And he would just rent videos and then pirate all of them. So he had movies, he had Coliseum home videos. Mm. And those were the easiest things to sit me down and put me in front of. So I got in through that. My first wrestling memory is Quick Draw Rick McGraw, WWF wrestler who passed away while a WWF wrestler, but his last televised match was a brutal squash with Roddy Piper, mm-hmm. where Piper destroyed him. So I saw that match, and then weeks later there was an advertisement for WWF magazine where they had a memorial for Rick McGraw. So I thought Roddy Piper killed him in the in the wrestling match.
At that age, I completely understand putting those two things together.
So I'm from Buffalo, New York. So we got we got New York City syndication, we got local syndication, we got Ontario syndication. Mm. So my Saturdays was 4 or 5 hours of wrestling.
Mm. All of it WWF.
All WWF. And so, and I had an old TV with a dial on it, and the dial only went to channel 10. TBS was channel 12. So when I got a new TV, with the digital remote, and I can go through all the cable channels, I landed on TBS, I landed on Jim Crockett. Mm. And that became my main wrestling. Mm. Going forward was Crockett, NWA, WCW. Mm. And that, being a WCW fan in the late 90s, Ultimo Dragon Jim.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And was that your then gateway into Toriumon?
Yeah. So I got a job at a video game store. One of my coworkers was also a big pro wrestling fan, and he was getting into the early days of tape trading. So he was ECW fan. He was a work rate guy. So he wanted to get tapes from Japan. And I'm just all right, I'm a wrestling fan. Let me get in on this. I know these guys here, this Ultimo Dragon show, sure, get me that. So that kind of became my supplemental viewing. I got that. I got into it. I was getting the tapes, I don't know, maybe quarterly. Toriumon didn't have that much TV in 1999, 2000 anyway. Mm. But that kind of became my supplemental viewing to WCW. And then when WCW went out of business, that was the time I went full in onto Toriumon. The website and all that started basically in 1999, early 2000, you really didn't need much translation. It was essentially, they were just doing matches during that period of time. But as we got into the formation of the original M2K and everything, I'm getting these tapes, and originally they're just matches, but more and more tapes are filled with talking. And I'm just like, what the fuck's going on? Because nobody's covering that stuff in, you know, 2000, 2001. You had like Zach Arnold, who would just give mistranslated results. Meltzer didn't cover anything small in the Observer around that time. And I would complain constantly to my coworker, and he was just like, well, you can't do it. And I said, I'll do it.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. So I made a crappy web page, and now
do not do that web page down. I was reading iHeartDG before it was even called that, before there was a DG. Like, it was an invaluable resource. I assumed like you already like had a grounding in Japanese.
Absolutely not.
No? Was it the wrestling that spurred you on to learn?
Wrestling and gaming. Really, right. was the two things
kind as of two whole new worlds opened up, isn't it? I guess
simultaneously, yeah. You know, most of my study would be through gaming, and then I'd be able to apply that knowledge back around. I didn't even have a PC when I started that webpage. I built the original version of that website on a Dreamcast web browser.
What?
Holy shit!
What?
Yeah,
truly the greatest console.
No cut and paste. Didn't have proper encoding for Japanese pages, so you'd get like the garbled shift JIS. I mean, this was back in those days. So yeah, that is my origin story.
Yeah, and I remember you said before, like, the company was always sort of quite supportive of the site. And at what point did they decide, hey, we want this guy in house?
Kind of long story. So in 2006. There was going to be a show in the US. It was called DG. It was going to be called DG Impact. It was going to be like Shima, Shingo, BB Hulk, Jack Evans, some other guys. And for whatever reason, whoever was advertising the show put my website as the contact information. Unbeknownst to me. So that came in. I ended up reaching out to the people that were booking the show. And I was like, I can do this if you need any help, but you need to give me information. And they were like, okay. And then Shingo broke his hand on Homicide's head and the show got canceled. But then when we come back around 2008, they ran shows in Los Angeles and Hawaii. And again, I just reached out and I said, you know, any sort of fan that's going to want to be interested in this show is probably going to visit my site at some time. Just kind of dropping my nuts on the table for that. And ended up becoming friends with the guy who ended up becoming the president of Dragon Gate USA. At the same time, I stayed in touch with him, became friendly with him, helped out wherever needed. When Dragon Gate USA started, I dealt with Gabe as much as I could. Wasn't super pleasant, but rather than go through him, I went mostly through the Japanese side. And fast forward, I moved here in 2015. And I went to them and I'm just like, all right, I'm here. If you need any help, I can do these things. Do you want to start social media, English social media? And they're like, we don't have to do anything. Sure.
If you will take care of this, absolutely.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. I mean, there was an English Twitter for Dragon Gate before there was a Japanese one, for example. Like, they were that behind on all of that. And then in terms of the announcing gig itself, that was also a pandemic fluke, essentially, because originally it was Wedding Letter Larry Dallas.
Yeah.
Were being flown in for it. And the idea was basically sit next to them and help them translate. Well, to go back a little bit, when the network started, Mr. Kito, the president of Dragon Gate, you know, I'm very good friends with him. He introduced me to the Gower people and they were joking like, hey, can you do English commentary? I'm like, do I look like I can do English commentary? I said no. And they're like, okay. So then the idea was for me to help them translate. And then they wanted to do more than Lenny was able to do. Because, you know, Lenny lives in the US, full-time job, full-time family, on top of whatever other wrestling stuff he was doing in 2019. So they asked me, so for Korak and Hall shows, do you want to try? It'll be, you know, you and Larry, you know, Larry will talk endlessly. So if you get stuck, you get nervous, just throw to him and let him talk. And if I didn't interrupt him, he'd probably still be talking right now, 4 years later. So we tried that with the idea that if it's a disaster, we'll burn the tape and you know.
Nobody need ever know.
Nobody needed to know. Yeah, we basically...
That's how we did the pilot for this show.
That's how we did the pilot for every show we've
done.
Yes,
yeah.
and somehow we're still here, right? Mm. It ended up, it worked. The first show I did was like a really low stakes show. It was like a Doi Darts Cork and Hall show. We did that. And then we did the first Torimon reunion. It was kind of like the trial shows. And it was good enough that, okay, when Lenny's not around, you guys can do it. Mm. The Cork shows need translation more than they need play by play.
Yeah. So for like the uninitiated, that's kind of the big show of the month is Korakuen, where all the big angles take place, where most of the talking takes place.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas like if it's in Osaka, it's just all matches. So yeah. Like English commentary isn't fun for those shows because it's just calling matches. Whereas the Korakuen shows, you get to dive into the storylines, give background to characters, do callbacks, things like that. And that would have been what I was good at. So it made sense. And then there was like this flu that went around and it shut the world down for 3 years. And Larry couldn't come back. Lenny left wrestling entirely briefly. He comes and goes now. I don't know what his status is now. But, Larry went home and he couldn't come back. And I'm just, so I go to them, I'm like, what do you want to do about English? And they're like, well, doing it by yourself. Probably hard. I said hard, but not impossible. Mm. Just because I didn't want it to die. I knew if we didn't pick it back up, they would probably never go back to it.
Yeah.
So, and you know, flying those guys in is really expensive, but I live down the street. Yeah. I work cheap.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm 12 minutes from Cork and all, so it's not a big deal. So I went, I did. And again, if it's a disaster, we'll burn the tape. So it wasn't that good. It was the July 2020 Korakuen, the first show back from the pandemic in Korakuen. The next time around, they're like, well, why don't we put Ho-Ho with you? Ho-Ho Lun, WWF Cruiserweight Classic veteran, Hong Kong cool star, godfather of Southeast Asian pro wrestling, Ho-Ho Lun. And my first thought went, do you remember, I think it was a Wrestle Kingdom where Yoshitatsu was on commentary?
Yeah. Oh, we have recently watched the match from that show. For this program.
Okay, then I had never met Ho-Ho. I didn't know how much English he spoke. Didn't know if he had. And the first place my head went was, what if it's like Yoshitatsu? He speaks English, but he doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
And it was awkward the first couple times, but then we ended up finding a groove and we became friends and all that. And now I think it's worked out pretty well. And now I still work. I'm still cheaper than flying other people in, so they're gonna stick with me.
Just stay less than an airfare, and you know you'll always have a job. You've spoken to two quick questions there. So just quickly, out of the guys who are there, is Ho-Ho the guy who speaks the best English?
He's essentially the only other person that speaks English.
Fine, fair enough. So he's native, like he's Hong Kong, so his native language is Cantonese.
Right. He's UK native, actually.
Oh, really? I know he has done some stuff over here.
Yeah,
sure. I didn't realize that.
Maybe dual citizenship? I'm not sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, his English, I mean, yeah. Horiguchi, Genki Horiguchi speaks a little bit of English.
Kind of. So when I hear him, I generally get the feeling that he understands more than he can actually speak. So he can understand what you're saying, but can't necessarily form the entirety of the response.
Yeah, so he just says yes to everything.
Yeah. Genki, we hear that a lot. but he's a load of fun. My other question was, last night I ended up watching the version that you did commentary over.
Okay.
Was that Ho-Ho's first time seeing it?
It was.
Because listening to him mark out for literally everything adds a whole new layer of joy to this match.
Yeah, he had never even, it was the first time he'd ever even heard of it when we sat down to watch it. So.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's why when we did the little intro before, it was me, Horiguchi, and him. I don't think he said anything.
No, he doesn't. And it's quite funny. You can see his face when he realizes he hasn't said nothing for 5 minutes, and then you cut to the match.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't say anything, but I don't know anything about this match. I don't know any of these guys.
Hey, it's fine. It's fine. It makes it all the more enjoyable to watch that. Mark, we're not going to go through and ask about everybody in this match, but did Torimon as a promotion get any other nominations than this?
So not including Dragon Gate, of course. Torimon itself, there was only one other match that was nominated. It was also Korakuen. It was a It was from the Verano Peligroso 2001 tour, and it was another multi-team freeway tag. It was Magnum, Ryu Saito, and Dragon Kid versus Shima Suwa and Don Fuji versus Mochizuki, Darkness Dragon, and Yasushi Kanda.
I can see Jay mouthing along with you, like he knows this match off the top of his head, right?
It was the first one. It was the first one on TV. Right.
Ah.
Yeah, something I probably have seen, but it would have been 20 years since I've seen it.
Yeah, it was the second three-way they did, but it was the first one on TV. The first one was essentially the same teams, but you replaced Ryo Saito with Tomohiro Ishii.
What?
It wasn't televised. There's no footage of it. It doesn't exist, but it was like April of 2001 was the trial of the three-way six-man at a small house show.
Wow. So this one, I have seen this countless times, but I still get confused over who is on which team. Because, for example, I naturally expect Dragon Kid to be a do-fixer guy, and I expect Susumu to be with M2K. However, this is for the UWA Trios Championship, and it is the champions Shin M2K, who are Masashi Mochizuki, Dragon Kid, and Kenichiro Arai, versus do-fixer, who are Magnum Tokyo, Genki Horiguchi, and Susumu Yokosuka. Versus Crazy Max, who are Suwa, Don Fuji, and Shima, versus the Italian Connection, who are Yoshino, Kondotti Shuji, and Milano Collection AT. Mochizuki, Kid, Genki, Shima, Susumu, and Yoshino were all covered back on episode 37 when we did the Chicago Ridge Six Man, and on 51 when we talked about Mochi versus Shingo. Here, though, Yoshino is spelled with two S's instead of an H because he is a luxury Italian brand and has a fabulous head of hair because he used to be a jungle boy, not that one. I'm going to have to rely on Jay's help for a little bit of this, but we should sort of, this match now breaks our 20-year rule, so we should briefly explain who the rest of the participants are, because there's a fair chance a lot of our listenership have never heard of half of these people. So rounding out M2K is Kenichiro Arai. He is now 51, but looks exactly the same as he does today. That is not a compliment. He is a headbutts and tiger suplex guy, and his gimmick, like, he started out sort of like a hard-drinking baseball player, like borderline alcoholic, driver. I think. Oh, he was a truck driver.
It was a truck, because it's a shoot. He was a real-life truck driver before he got into wrestling.
Do you know what? I can totally see that.
Yeah. So he was the one that drove the truck for the first however many years.
Yeah, makes sense. He still occasionally mists people with booze to this day. Magnum Tokyo is from the first Torimon class, and along with Shima, was kind of like pegged to be a star from the get-go. And I think early on, if you'd seen any Toriumon, it was likely to be Magnum in his adult film character, doing his dancing entrance, the hip-swiveling Frankensteiner or the AV star press. Much like Dragon Kid and Shima, he is part of the class that Ultimo got booked into WCW, with Tokyo even getting onto pay-per-view in one of the World War III enormous 60-man battle royals.
He's probably known for the team with Disco and Alex Wright, if
yes,
people are that old to remember.
Yeah. They wanted to be the Boogie Knights, but everybody called them the Dancing Fools.
Well, not known for his hustle run as Detective Alan Kuroki.
I had to stop myself at any point in my notes calling him Detective Alan. Don Fuji is the man they now call the Drill Sergeant. Like Araken, he is also now in his 50s and looks identical. And again, this is not a compliment. I noticed when he makes his entrance during the version you did commentary over, Ho-Ho was like, oh, same hairstyle. And you're kind of like, yeah, same everything. He's another of the inaugural graduating class and another hoop here for WCW. He has a sumo influence. Well, that's been kind of played down over the years, I think, and used to change his name every January, but settled on Don Fuji in like 2002, I think.
Yeah.
There was all the dandies and all the sumos and all the rest of it, and the point where he added an extra I just for fun.
Yeah, Sumo Fuji, Sumo Dandy Fuji, Sumo Dandy Fuji 2000.
Yeah.
Big Fuji, Don Fuji.
So he's hung on to that for 20 years now. I noticed the internet cares so little for Don Fuji that his Wikipedia hasn't been updated since 2015. Every British wrestling fan of a certain age knows Suwa. He is the more training necessary, many skinny boys, shit man. And yes, another from the initial graduating class. The only way to describe Suwa, I think, is just badass. Like, he's cool. He's tough. He was a fantastic wrestler before he had to retire. He's somebody I kind of have underappreciated in terms of like Dragon Gate and Toriumon. like I hadn't really seen enough of him. And then recently I'd gone back and watched some stuff from the split. And like, that's the point where he's sort of less interested in still being around, but is still like putting in a decent performance every time. So like even before there was the Susumu versus Dragon Kid series, there was the Suwa versus Dragon Kid series. And those two had some like great chemistry and great matches between them. Kondotti Shuji is the Italian alter ego of the former and current Shuji Kondo. Everyone got an Italian name when they joined the Italian Connection, apart from Anthony W. Mori, who got to keep pretending to be British just in Italian flag colours. Anyway, Kondo is the guy. He's the guy who introduced me to the concept of the Power Junior, like the stocky, powerful little guy whose job it is to base for the Flippy Boys and then mow them down. Was he also All Japan Booker for a while?
Yeah.
He was certainly in charge of the juniors, as evidenced by him being at the top of the juniors when I saw them.
I mean, he was Booker there. He's vice president for Wrestle One.
Yes, I remember that. Like he's big influence behind the scenes for quite some time now.
And now has personal training gym and has a financier cookie shop that makes him more money. Makes him more money than wrestling does.
Hey, why not? Events in the match we're going to talk about hastened his departure from Italian Connection to form Hagure Gundam, which begat more probably my favorite Dragon System heel unit, Arganiso. And finally, Milano Collection AT. Yes, the current New Japan commentator. Personally, I could gush about Milano for an hour, like one of my favorite wrestlers ever. He's tall, he's blonde, he looks like a movie star. There's not an ounce of fat on him. I have previously referred to him as human 2.0. Like he looks like our evolution from the future sent back to show us how to wrestle.
He's got a way of moving that is very unlike most wrestlers.
Yeah. So that's something I like in wrestlers is people who move around the ring like nobody else. So today that would be people like Zack Sabre Jr. and Ares and AR Fox, who just use the ring in a different way and move like nobody else. And Milano certainly falls into that category. Even if a lot of his big stuff actually isn't on show in this match, like pretty much the entire point of this match is make Milano a star. And you don't get a lot of his, if you're looking for his offense, you don't get a lot of his bigger moves in this. There's no Armani shoe exchange. There is no, his various drivers aren't part of it. Like he only uses like one of the Italian stretches, I think. And of which he had like, he left DG long before I got to go to Japan. I got to see him live for New Japan in a match that they didn't even put on TV.
Really?
And I'm so glad I did, because just five matches and 36 days later, he had his final match suffering an eye injury and was forced to retire.
Yeah, I saw him wrestle live once. It was Chicago. It was the weekend of the ROH six-man. It had to be 2006 in Chicago in a small shack outside of Chicago. It was a singles match with Chris Hero, I think was the only time I ever saw him. I mean, Milano got stretchered out and I went and I said, you should have stayed in Dragon Gate.
The sad thing about Milano in terms of our podcast series, this was his only nominated match.
Oh,
he had fewer nominations than Venezia. Because Venezia had another nomination under his Suki gimmick.
Wow.
I mean, what would the other matches be? Okay, if you're picking another Milano match,
I don't know. Like, would it have to be a big Magnum singles match? Would it?
The UDG match with Magnum that this match set up, or the second match with Saito.
He is one of those wrestlers I could just watch all day, though. Like, yeah. I love watching him just move around the ring. It's incredible.
But in terms of what people have nominated Dragon Gate for our project, it's like, of the 12 Toryumon and Dragon Gate matches that were nominated, only three are singles matches.
That makes sense, given the house style.
Tags are the ones that stick out.
So this match itself, although the term party match was kind of coined for AEW's fun multi-man matches, I think this is a party from the get-go. Doofixer are out first, coming through the crowd, and there is a woman in a greeny-brown shirt who loses her mind, puts it back in, and then loses it a second time when Magnum stops to pose next to her. If modern day fans are fans of Daniel Garcia's dancing. You ain't seen nothing till you've seen a full Magnum Tokyo / Doofixer big match entrance. This is all three guys on the match team, Ryo Saito, Kness, and two dancers, giving it the full beans to Peter Robertson's Tokyo Go, since adopted by DDT's Kazuki Hirata, if we're keeping score. To this day, I am a sucker for song and dance entrances, and it's entirely Magnum Tokyo's fault. For what it's worth, I also like Mr. Egoist, his Dragon Gate theme.
Yeah, not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I liked it too. I like it better.
And most importantly, not someone else's copyright. Buongiorno, here come the Italian fashion models to Milano.
And the
theme.
Car.
And what?
And the car.
And the car, yes. Oh, Christ.
Yep. Berlin at a boxer.
Yeah. Milano has his invisible dog and four people in large crap t-shirts who do a little walk and pose. Saito and Yokosuka mock their poses on the outside. This entrance, I think, gets better next year when Yoshino and Mori start joining in and it becomes a proper like catwalk show in the middle of the ring. Crazy Max also comes through the crowd, led by Taru, blazing a siren from his megaphone. These guys are the popular badasses of Toriumon, and Shima does his traditional My Dongo's Ding 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 routine with Fuji ringing the bell in time with his hip thrusting. And finally, Shin M2K of Masaki Mochizuki, Dragon Kid, and Kenichiro Arai, which I guess makes them MDK, so don't tell Nick Gage. They, of course, are in their shiny athletic jackets and riding their super cool for the time Razor scooters, a tradition carried on by M3K today, I guess, because Mochi's just had them in the garage or something.
Yeah, literally today.
Yeah. This whole thing runs 7 minutes with cuts, so God knows how long it went in the building.
Something to note was the undercard of the show only had about 24 minutes of wrestling prior to this.
Yeah, I looked at that undercard. The only match I would want to watch is the opener, which is like Mori and Saito against... it's Kness and Saito against Mori and somebody I cannot remember. But the rest of it, let's just say it does not look like a vintage Toriumon / Dragon Gate card.
So the thing when you think about it on paper... This Korakuen show had, 50 to 55 minutes of actual wrestling on it?
Yeah.
Which would sound disappointing. And then by the end of the evening, no one will probably have noticed anything of that.
No, I don't think anybody went home from the show unhappy.
By the end of the entrances,
yeah,
everybody was ready to go home. That's what everybody that I've talked to that was in this match has said, that this was the type of match that the entrances were worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
And everything else was just... service.
Yeah. A quick note, much like the Chicago match, all of the current champions are involved here, as not only are M2K the trios champions, but Yoshino is the UWA welterweight champion and Magnum is the current Ultimo Dragon gym champion. So that's the equivalent of the Brave Gate and Dream Gate champions today. We should quickly run over the rules. One guy from each team is legal at all times. Standard lucha tag rules, so if you leave the ring, a partner can replace you without physical contact required. And it's elimination style, so if a man is pinned or submitted, his whole team is gone. I don't really want to do play-by-play for this match. Like, so with Chicago, I went through and I was just like, okay, I'll write down all the cool stuff and we can like hang off to that. Everything in this match is cool stuff. No joke. This 25-minute match took me 2.5 hours to write my notes on last night. There is so much going on, and that's why I love it. I've said many times, one of the things I loved growing up was Jackie Chan movies. This is Jackie Chan pro wrestling.
Sure.
It's nonstop action, nonstop fighting, nonstop creativity from the bell. Apart from that, like, it's got all the character running through it as well, and stories running through it, which I think what puts it above the Chicago match. Chicago is the perfect shop window for this company. Oh, you've seen this? You like what we did here? Please buy our tapes from the merch stand and pirate our stuff because we don't legally sell it in the US. But this is our company. Please get into us. Whereas this is... like, there's stories going into it, there's stories coming out of it, there's stories running through the match itself. Every character gets a moment. Everybody gets to shine. Even from the start, like, you know, it's the ace of each team, Shima, Mochizuki, and Milano. And then in the other corner, it's Genki. And they were like, get the fuck out. We want Magnum. Like, it's supposed to be all the bosses. Horiguchi, one thing I love throughout this match is Horiguchi's recurring role as the kid who isn't being allowed to play with the big boys. And he's a tremendous, impetuous little imp, like trying to ruin things whenever he can and trying to shine and get some spotlight.
He's a god of mischief throughout this entire thing.
Yeah. A running theme of Toriumon a lot of the time was everyone hates Magnum Tokyo, including often members of his own team. Mm. So although he does get in the ring to start the match, he immediately gets a three-way kicking. I think quite possibly a lot of people wanted to do that backstage as well as in the ring.
The interesting thing about this match, I mean, this, in terms of, you talked about all, you know, all the stories and everything coming together, this was a lot of ways to make a game. This was like the end of disc three for Toriumon.
Right.
Because this is where everything changed immediately after this match.
Mm.
Italian Connection breakup. This builds to Steel. Am I getting ahead of myself talking about?
No. Please go ahead. Like, I did think like this was not going to follow like our usual structure because it simply can't because of how fast it goes.
Yeah. You know, this was kind of the culmination of the goofy character dance era of Toriumon. You know, the excessive entrances. Mm. Everybody in the match still has a character. You know, like there's these guys are Italian. You know, these guys are Italians. There's a mini gorilla. Doofixer is still kind of at the peak dance troupe time period. Whereas immediately after this match, the Italian Connection break up. Magnum does the thing where he separates from Doofixer, and you know that version of Doofixer never gets back together. Mm. It's like, you know, Kness gets injured and Susumu and all those guys leave, and you know, Aga and Iso forms, and Aga and Iso are like the new heel unit. It's not the funny heel, you know, M2K was a funny heel unit. Mm. The Italian Connection were a funny heel unit. Doofixer were dancing heels.
Yeah.
So Doofixer stopped being heels. The Italian Connection
stopped being heels.
Stopped being heels. Because all the heels went to Aga and Iso. And then there was the Steel Cage match that this match directly led to. And you know, that was the match that Ultimate Dragon was in WWE, and he sat at home, watched it, and he got mad, and he flew back to Japan to yell at them for the matchmaking.
What?
And that was where the decision to get rid of Ultimate Dragon started. So literally this match was...
It's a tentpole in history for Toriumon and then Dragon Gate. Yeah.
Yeah. Toriumon ends here. The period between this and Dragon Gate starting is like the DLC. You know, you get the extra stuff.
Yeah. It's like... But, it's just under a year, isn't it, until the split actually happens from this match?
Yeah.
I hadn't put two and two together before.
A lot of the, you know, the idea of everybody in Toriumon has a wacky character or something. Essentially, that stopped here. I mean, we got the Florida Brothers in a little bit, but every new wrestler that debuted after this didn't really get, you know, there wasn't like Ryo Saito debuting as a bicycle, as a bike messenger, or Japanese guys debuting as Italians. And things like that. So this was in a lot of ways the culmination of everything from January 31st, 1999 until August 30th, 2003, everything that Toriumon Japan was and everything they built to and all of their identity. How can I say it? I mean, it
peaks and ends here, right?
It peaks and it kind of, the time flows throughout the match to where the match starts is kind of like, you know, you get all the charismatic leaders start, and then you get kind of the comedy, which embodies that kind of like goofy era of Toriumon. But then you get into the closing stretch where there's all that, you know, the precision and everything is perfect. Everything is fast and furious. And that was what Dragon Gate ended up being known for more than the punk rock goofy character aspect that Toriumon Japan had. So, I mean, this is where you could see the company shift in real time over the course of this match.
In many ways, you could say it was a match that was a celebration and a highlight of all of the different strengths of what Toriumon had and could be in one match, but it wasn't as up itself. It wasn't like, oh, we're trying to be pretentious. It was just naturally being those things. It's like, here's the fast guys. Here's how good our bases are. Here's the character and the goofiness.
Mm.
We can do a bit of brawling. We can do spots that most people haven't thought of and then was copied repeatedly, often in Pennsylvania for a certain company. It probably is a one-match encapsulation of a promotion, probably better than most matches I can think of.
Mm. You have kind of hit on something there that I was kind of going to say for the end, but like in 2003, nowhere else was doing this.
Right.
Like people would get the tapes and wow at it, but like people weren't generally copying it. Like if you want a fast paced multi-man match now, you can probably find one on Dynamite next week.
Sure.
But 20 years ago, you had to get a Torium on tape to see any of this stuff. I was looking like this is basically runs all the greatest hits. I think the only greatest hit spot they don't do in this is Giant Rubber Band.
Sure, because that was a Jimmy's thing. So that was a decade later.
Oh, really? I thought that came before that. I thought Genki had already done that in Torium on.
Maybe I'm getting confused. Maybe.
Yeah. But they do stuff like the Dragon System Corner Rush Train, I think, is done the best it's ever done in this.
Yeah.
So for the unfamiliar, usually one team isolates an opponent in a corner and they all run and hit him with a move. And usually the referee is distracted so the rest of the unit who aren't participating officially can also run in. And then at some point it gets reversed and someone from that team will suffer the same fate. Here, Doofixer, the Italians, and M2K are all lined up for a shot at Shima. Susumu's first with a lariat. Shima then dodges Genki and runs back the other way, hitting Magnum with a double knee strike. Fuji and Sua speed in and get theirs in too. And with no loyalty to Magnum, Italians and M2K all sprint to the opposite corner so they can get a lick in on him too. Kondo's the last to go, but Genki surprises him halfway across the ring with a drop kick. Kid gets a shot in, but then Kondo avoids Araken and drives Mochizuki back into the opposite corner. And so with Mochi and Orion opposite corners, we then run the spot in two corners simultaneously until Genki again spoils the party by tripping up Don Fuji. I love this. Like, this kind of intricate stuff. Just, I could sit and watch it all day. Like, the best part of it all, not a single cut. It all plays out in the hard cam for like a minute and a half. It's beautiful stuff. And then that immediately leads into the next of the greatest hits, Let's All Chop Don Fuji.
The train sequence for me is, it's a great example of one of the strengths of this match one when I was doing my notes watch.
Mm.
And the strength of it is, it's that sense of misdirection. You know, you've got a familiarity of what's going to happen, but constantly something is happening that's changing your expectations, like the change in direction of the train, like Genki tripping up Shuji Kondo. Later on, there's various elements. It's like it constantly happens of the match is keeping you off guard, and that's what's making it fun. And one of the bits I really liked about the network version, which was crisper than the version that I had watched previously.
Yeah. Oh, there's spots in that. The footage is so good. There's spots in that where you can pause it and read the small print on the front of Genki Horiguchi's T-shirt, which has not been possible for 20 years.
Yeah. For me, it was like just watching the smiles, just the sheer smiles on the crowd.
Mm.
Because throughout, it's like, yeah, there are some people that I don't think their face moved out of a smile for the entire thing.
It's funny. So very often when you watch Korakuen Hall stuff, the first couple of rows are the expensive tickets and the faces on those people don't tend to move, and all the noise very often is coming from that big block on the south side where all the cheaper stuff is. In this match, as it goes on, you can see the more expensive tickets really getting into it and really marking out for what they're seeing.
Other than when they're saving their handbags.
Yeah, there is a bit in a brawl on the outside where Magnum hits Yoshino, I think, with somebody's plastic bag full of merchandise and then picks up a woman's handbag to hit him with and then looks at it and goes, oh no, that's too nice, and gives it back to her. So, what happens? I mean, we beat the shit out of Don Fuji. Magnum does make some proper attempts to put away Yoshino, but we go into the next party spot, which is Susumu hooking Yoshino for a delayed suplex. And when Kondo comes in, he thinks he's going to break it up, but Kondo's like, no, walks past, hauls Dragon Kid into the ring, and they have a delayed suplex competition. And then Shima's all like, Don, you should get in on this. So he comes in, cuts Genki off, lifts him up, and gets rolled into a small package for a near fall.
Yeah, all of this misdirection's coming from Genki for some reason.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Kid is trying to fight his way out of his predicament, which kind of forces Kondo around behind Susumu. Shuji completes his suplex, but can't get out of the way of Yokosuka suplexing his own partner onto him. And then Susumu pronounces himself the winner. There's an 11-man submission hold, mostly on poor Horiguchi, who by the end has both arms and legs locked up, and you can't see his head. In fact, you can't see any part of him. But what I liked about this was it wasn't constant offense. So if someone comes in and sees their partner in a hold, they check with them that they are okay and can still withstand it before going and locking on something else onto an opponent. And like, you know, Sue is the first guy and he goes to help Shima and she was like, no, I'm fine in this chin lock. You go and beat up Genki some more. And by the time everyone's attached, the Italians kind of have the best of it. So Yoshino and Konzo are in aggressor positions and only Milano's waiting to come in. And despite Mochizuki practically offering his arm, Milano chooses to go all the way to the middle and sent on Genki, which breaks the whole thing up and causes the woman in the crowd to scream really loudly.
A bunch of stuff in this match was kind of a callback to the previous month as well. There was a regular, and there was a three-way six-man, and it was Dufixer, Italian Connection. No, it was Italian Connection, M2K, and Crazy Max, and Dufixer did a run in to cause a no contest, which was, well, Dufixer, really, why aren't we in this match? You know, and then there's like, well, there's a fourth quarter, we're making a four way. So that's how this match ended up being made. So there's a lot of cool little callback spots. The one that comes to mind is there was a point somewhere in the match where Shima tells Doty to go up onto the turnbuckle and power bomb Dragon Kid. And you can see Shuji, he's like, you know, mistrust face. That's because the previous month they did the exact same thing. I think what happened in the previous month, Kondo caught Dragon Kid on the Frankensteiner and Shima was going to come help him, but instead Venus Iconoclasm out of it. So this time around it was the throwback. So Shima tries it again and Shuji was ready for it.
Yeah.
This time, and then they did something else, and then it comes back around. So there are a lot of cool callback spots to the previous three-way six-mans, or like when Susumu did the pass-off of the Deja Vu.
Yes.
To Kondo, which is like, you know, there's not many people who can base for the Deja Vu, much less do it that way.
Yeah.
You know, those are the two spots that come to mind. That, and so there's a spot in this match where one of the wrestlers swears it was a horrible botch.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the quality, for one thing, the quality of execution in this match is unbelievable.
Anything come to mind since you guys have notes on a lot of the spots of the match?
I mean, the only thing I notice that's close to is there's a bit where Milano has hold of Magnum and he's going to do his run around the corner stunner. And he kind of slips on one rope. That is the closest thing to a botch in 25 minutes that I spotted.
Yeah, not that one.
It's not a botch, and I wouldn't call it a botch, but maybe this guy might. During the crisscross tope sequence, it's the only time I've seen Yoshino hold onto a rope for a fraction of a second just to get the timing right, just to avoid.
He had to go at 99 miles an hour instead of 100.
So what was it?
Sunset flip. There was a bunch of sunset flips going this way, and one of them went the other way.
Oh no. I mean, trying to coordinate six sunset flips at once is enough.
Yeah, but Milano to this day.
Really?
I can't watch this match because I fucked up.
What?
Amazing.
And I thought Yoshino was the perfectionist of...
And I, like you guys, I didn't realize it until like I went to him for some notes on what can I, I'm gonna do English commentary on the match, anything about the match do you want me to talk about, and he's like, oh no, I fucked up, I can't watch that match again.
Wow. Oh my god, that really is perfectionism.
Sunset flips this way and I went the other way.
We also get things like a 13-man vertical suplex after Ryo Saito sneaks into the ring to add himself on.
Well, he didn't sneak. He ran straight past the referee.
On the TV version, the quality is bad enough that it looks like Magnum is blocking the referee's view. On the network version, the referee very clearly points at him as he runs past the gathering of people. So eventually we get to some serious attempts to get to pinfalls. M2K run roughshod over Suwa with their signature offense, only ending when Dragon Kid hits a springboard Rana and Shima, Jesus Christ, destroys him with a flying forearm to turn the pin over. He still kicks out. Shima then leapfrogs Kid, sending him into the position for Suwa's triple F. You can guess what F stands for, which is a high angle pedigree for the first elimination at 1825.
So, I love that little bit of the kind of Shima is hiding Suwa's presence, yeah, so Dragon, yeah, Kid can't counter. It's a lovely little touch.
In fine wrestling tradition, we are guaranteed new champions.
Yeah, the triple F actually. Do you guys know what it stands for?
I mean,
do we don't.
All know what it stands for.
It's work safe.
Oh, is it? Because I didn't think it was.
Full face flat.
Oh, okay. I had been told it was fuck, fuck, fuck.
That's probably just people taking it.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So El Numero Uno was like 4 months before this.
Yes.
Yeah, so Genki's backslide is deadly.
It's still a meme at this point, though.
Okay. It's not called Backslide from Heaven yet, though, is it?
Yeah, it's still just a regular backslide. Okay. It still kind of gets the laughing on commentary when the backslide comes out.
Yeah. But Don Fuji still has to make the save by shoulder tackling his own man to break it up, I noticed. We get that alliance you talked about, Shima and Kondo. And the run to the second elimination is one of my favorite parts of this. So Shima and Milano dodge and reverse a load of each other's stuff. Horiguchi takes Shima's head off with a top rope dropkick from behind. But can't get him up for the beach break. Shima tries his own backslide for two and then abandons his plan for the Schwein so a rampaging Kondo can wipe Horiguchi out with the Lanzase carrying spear. Don and Kondo have a lariat fight. Yoshino takes out Fuji with what we now call the sling blade, but gets flapjacked by Suwa, who gets a top rope dropkick from Magnum, who takes a corner run stunner from Milano, who gets back suplexed by Shima, who collides with Susumu on a simultaneous lariat attempt and staggers backwards into the backslide for the elimination. The crowd, who haven't let up since the first note of Tokyo Go, somehow find another level for this pinfall. It's so loud. Like, I've ended up watching this match 3 times in 2 days. It's the perfect Korakuen crowd. Like, they are into absolutely everything.
And the other bit that I like is I think it's Ian Hamilton calls it the parade of moves, this kind of tag match where everyone comes in, does a move, someone else does a move. And I'm kind of used to that of being a... It's a way of popping the crowd, resetting the match, giving everyone a little bit of a break.
Because very often it's parade of finishers, and it's like whoever's not winning gets to do their move to pop the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas here, the fact that they do it and then it immediately flows into the finish is unexpected. So again, it's that element throughout the match that we've had of they're doing things that you know familiarly, but the end result is unexpected.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate the sheer... There's a term that I'm coming to use, which is pleasingly messy.
Yes.
And that, to me, is what that backslide is, because it's not clean, but it's better because it's not clean. It feels more opportunistic.
Yeah. So we talked about the stories that kind of run in and out of this, and one of those is the breakup of the Italian connection. So... It is Yoshino and Milano are the guys who want to fight fair and everybody else wants to still be a heel. That is right? Yeah. So on the outside, we have Brother Yoshini, who is Brother Yashi, the man who will never let go of the word brother. I remember Stevie Brother Sugimoto, which is a long time ago. He was originally supposed to be in this match, but he's broken his arm.
Yeah, he broke his dislocated elbow or broken arm. I don't remember exactly what the injury was, but he was maybe injured before World. I don't remember if he wrestled at World or not.
Mm.
But yeah, he got injured somewhere in the interim. Mm. So he was on the outside running interference.
Yeah. So he intercepts Magnum on the top rope and he's trying to encourage Milano to do dastardly things to him. But Mr. Collection wants to fight fair and tries to like get him to get off. And then Venezia, who we have mentioned, if it hasn't been said loud enough, is a mini in a gorilla costume who was, now this got more complicated than I thought. I always think of him as being the Italian Connection mascot, but twice in this match, he attacks the Italian Connection.
Right. He was originally Yoshino's pet gorilla.
Right.
From
the jungles of Italy?
The jungle,
from
yeah.
The jungles of Italy. he found him and brought him back. But Don Fuji dressed up in a full-size gorilla costume and held up a mirror to the mini gorilla and convinced him that they were family. So the mini gorilla went with Don Fuji. That led to a match for custody of the gorilla. It was Don Fuji and Yoshino. But Kness got involved and turned into a three-way for the custody of the mini gorilla. And Kness won that. And Yoshino was just like, fine, you know, we have good matches. I trust you to take care of the gorilla. And they immediately put the Dofixer mask on him and make the gorilla dance. So this was the dancing gorilla period of Toriumon Japan. So at the time of this match, he was Dofixer affiliated.
Mm-hmm.
But friendly with Yoshino because Yoshino is his friend from back in the jungle. So the issue that comes to a head in this match was he would interfere on behalf of Dofixer in matches against the Italian Connection.
Mm.
And it would enrage Kondo and Brother. But Yoshino would always...
Yes, there is a point where Kondo has to be held back from essentially killing the little gorilla.
Yeah, which he would go on to do after the match.
So Venezia, he runs in here, he drop kicks Brother's bad arm, forcing him to let go and go to the floor. So Magnum foils a superplex, instead hitting a powerbomb out of the corner. And when Milano kicks out, wraps him up in what I called a dirty looking submission hold, the ST Pheromone, which is like, it's a cross between the STF and PAX Brutalizer. I don't know how a person's limbs can be tied up like that. It just doesn't make sense.
One of the arms was in his knee or under his knee, I think.
This gets broken up when Susumu and Yoshino's battle enters the ring there's a great spot where, well, I say great, Yoshino escapes a Yokosuka cutter and is shoved aside by Kondo so he can German suplex Susumu, who takes the thing vertically on the side of his face. Like he gets planted like a fence post. Anyway, the point is we eventually come down to Milano versus Magnum one-on-one. Milano gets out of the erect smash, which is, it's got like a cutthroat side effect, I guess. Yeah. But Magnum spits in his eye and drops him with the most complicated DDT of all time, the 44.
44 Magnum.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's a whole load of spinning around and messing about with arms. But when he actually does the DDT, he's not holding either of Milano's arms. It's
he's
just the
anything.
Normal DDT.
Yes.
So when he kicks out of that, Magnum connects with a leaping knee and his Zetsuen, which is like a spinning back kick to the head of a kneeling opponent. But he chooses to make the cover with one foot, which allows Milano to kick out. A couple more kicks and Magnum lifts Milano for his big finish, the Egoist Driver, which is like a pump handle Michinoku driver. Milano, though, rolls him to the mat and clamps in the AT lock, which is like a Kimura with an added head scissors. Magnum is fighting it. Kondo is holding Horiguchi back. Yokosuka is 90% in the ring with Yoshino clinging onto his legs, and the crowd are going bananas. Magnum makes it up to his feet, but Milano drops him back down, cranks it in harder, and gets a submission, wins the match, the titles for his team at 25-40. And most importantly, he's beaten the main singles champion, and he's beaten him for the first time ever.
Yes.
Like, this is a very important match for Milano Collection. As you might have guessed, like, I cannot say enough good things about this match. There are others that come close. Like, there are a couple of Florida Brothers comedy matches. And since we started doing this, the Thunder Queen battle, they run it close. This is my favorite match of all time. I could watch it every day and spot a new detail, and even did this time around, like Milano giving the handbag back to the lady in the room. There is a bit in another brawl on the outside where Magnum uses the Bash the Baddie hammer.
Is it Milano getting his revenge with the hammer?
It is Milano. It's not so much the revenge. He does. Like, it happens, like, at the very bottom of the screen as they're trying to do the complicated sunset flip spot. It's the, I'm going to kill this motherfucker face as he's, like, stalking him around the ring with a plastic hammer. As I said, it's not the shop window that Chicago was. It's got more story running through it. And I was thinking about it. I would argue that Arai is number 12 of 12 in this match.
Sure.
He does get to shine. Like, he does get the Hanshin Tiger suplex off, for example. But, like, if the worst, least featured person in your 12-man match is perfectly competent wrestler Kenichiro Arai, I think you're doing all right.
I mean, I would say 12, 11, and 10 were the champion team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mochi doesn't do too much.
He gets the Twister. He gets the Sankakagiri. Yeah. Like, but yet, no, you're right. That thinking about it, like, I mean, Dragon Kid's little bits are more spectacular than the other two's little bits, because whereas they're coming in with like a kick or a headbutt or a suplex, he's flying off the top rope with the Swan Dive Stunner or the Ultra Hurricane Rana and that kind of thing. But yeah, no, you're right. It really is more about the other three teams.
And Dragon Kid's peak is probably that period where it's also Suwa and Yokosuka and Kondo showing off their basing.
Yeah.
Susumu doing that ridiculous, I'm going to do this head scissors as Dragon Kid does.
I think I did in my initial nomination, but I don't want to call it the peak of the Dragon system, because I think Torimon and Dragon Gate had many hot streaks. Like, they had many peaks in terms of match quality and character moments, and that can do a disservice to stuff that's come before and stuff that has then come in the 20 years since. But, like, I can't call it anything other than, like, the night the planets aligned. Like, everybody involved is spot on. Nobody misses a thing. The crowd are as hot as you could ever want a crowd from entrances to final bell. Like, it's 12 men, a referee, and a mini monkey in perfect synchronization and coordination for almost half an hour. And I know there are a lot of people who kind of don't like this style and, like, will call it a dance, but, like, even the biggest Broadway shows, no dancer is going out there for half an hour. And in the middle of their dance, they're not having to get slammed or clotheslined or dropped on their head or anything like this. Like, yeah, I love it. It's absolutely must see. And I completely agree with what Alan Forel had to say during his Korakuen 60th anniversary miniseries. Like, this is the best thing to have ever happened in that room. And think of the ground that covers. I have spoken a lot. Our guest Jay, what is your personal opinion of this match?
I mean, it's the best match of all time.
Awesome. Cool. Show over. Let's go home.
I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, there's matches after where the precision and the speed and, you know, where the Dragon Gate style was fine tuned down to that very pure, everything is perfect.
Yeah.
Everything is a million miles an hour, you know, whether it be the Chicago Six Man or maybe some of the stuff that happened later on during like that 2013, 2015 period where, you know, kind of the last real peak golden age period we had. And there's other matches where like the character work and the story has been better. You know, some of the unit disbands matches, the other, one of the other matches that we did English commentary for was the Jimmy's and Mad Blanky unit disbands match. So in terms of, you know, character work and story, maybe that one was better. But I mean, there's a reason why the Dragon Gate style became the house style of the entire world, and this was the best example of it. You know, like you said, at this time, if you were watching indies or you were watching something else, this was totally new. The house style was still parroting the worst parts of 90s All Japan. You know, if you were watching, let's say, ROH around this period of time or something, it was still, let's do Burning Hammers and, you know, head drop pro wrestling. And
I mean, even down to entrances, like, where else in the world does the main guy's full stable come out to do a 2-minute dance routine with him as part of his entrance? Where else do the badasses come down the ramp on their scooters? You know,
right. Like, we could do three of the four right now. we could do three of the four. We would need another group to do Crazy Spot. We got to dance. Gold Class could kind of do the Italian Connection thing.
Yeah, I guess. I hadn't even thought about conflating those two. That's interesting.
Mm. And we have M3K, who do the exact same entrance. And then you could throw Z-Bratz in, and you could do it. you could do it, but you wouldn't get, and this isn't a knock on the people we have now, but Shima, Magnum, as garbage as humans as the two of them are, Milano, Mochizuki, you know, that level of charisma and star power and ability, you know, those four.
Yeah. At what point does any company have four aces at once?
Yeah. I mean, just having one of those four at any time would be enough, but having two, three, four, and you know, three of them being in-house trained, you know, it's not even, you know, Mochizuki was the only one pulled from somewhere else, and he was still a karate guy when he came in. You know, the character and the charisma and all the stuff came when he came to Toriumon. So he's essentially a homegrown guy too. I mean, that never again, you know, as good as the last generation, you know, Hulk, Shingo, Doi, Yoshi, those guys, you know, numerous four-way tags where, you know, four of those guys are the first four in the match. Now, you know, Kikuta, Yoshioka, Skywalker, you know, we could have a four-way and have four of those guys start in the match, but it's just not.
Yeah.
You know, those four guys were very incredibly special time in pro wrestling. And it was the beginning of the end of it, because this was, you know, Magnum had another 3 months as a top guy. Then he got injured. And by the time he came back, Milano was gone. So this was it.
And sadly, Milano never really seemed to reach his full potential as a singles guy anywhere.
Well, he was he went to New Japan and sort of like ended up in a tag team. Well, I mean, which was a good tag team, but like I never felt the New Japan Milano was anywhere near as good as the Toriumon Milano. I mean, he was able to slow down, I guess.
That's what he said. He said, it was so slow when I went there, and he had to find, and he couldn't do submissions. He had to, and he couldn't do the IR on people there because they were too heavy. So he had to find a new finish. So he had to do the Victoria, ended up becoming his finish, because that period of New Japan, you had to have a 1-2 kick out move.
Right.
So he couldn't use the AT lock or the Paradise lock.
Yeah.
As a finishing hold. So, and then he got injured right before, 2011, 2012 is when New Japan started to shift their house style to Dragon Gate style and picking up the pace and the speed of the matches. So if he had been able to keep going, I think he'd be more famous now.
Yeah. I mean, like with 20 pounds on him, he's bigger than most of the heavyweights.
Sure. He's tall.
Cause he's like 6 foot. Which is, you know, if you think Ishii is a heavyweight at 5'4" and whatever he weighs, you know.
Yeah. He's 5'4" both ways, though.
Yes. He is the real life Dr. Cube. Mark, where do you stand on this match? I feel like I have waffled praise for it for the past 45 minutes or so.
I mean, there is a reason this is only the second match that we've covered that me and Kieran both nominated.
That's true.
The other one, Jay, weirdly enough, was a DDT match between Akito and Asuka involving one light tube. But that was for completely different reasons. The bit that really just brings it home is, and Jay's English commentary on the Dragon Gate Network helped, the discussion that we've had really helped. It's realizing that in addition to all of the in-ring stuff, the amount of references, not callbacks, but actual logical progressions of storylines coming into it and coming out of it. Like you had, as you said, the Numero Uno tournament, which was like the rise of Genki. And then Genki gets another big scalp because he's the guy that eliminates. He's the guy that eliminates Shima in this match.
Which leads to him like staking a claim for a title shot against Magnum, doesn't it? And ends up in like a five-way cage match when initially it was just going to be Magnum versus Milano one-on-one.
So you've got elements like that. You've got what comes out of it. You've got they're telling the story of the last straw, which leads to Condotti basically snapping and eventually forming Arganisu.
Yeah.
It's so that is incredible because it's the level of storytelling. But really, it's like, I don't think there's a match that combines the level of action with the level of characters and the character work. Because almost everyone, you can sit someone down in this match that's never seen any of these guys, and by the end of it, you just say, okay, Ken Arai, what's his personality?
Mm.
Dragon Kid, Mochizuki. Someone will be able to tell you something about that wrestler that differentiates them from everyone else in that match.
Yeah.
They just get over. Some people get more of a shine, like Genki gets a lot of shine. Fuji is fantastic in the everyone slaps Don Fuji slaps everyone spot.
And in this match, that is a rest spot. Like, that is where they slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still one man getting his chest slapped to hell.
It's a potpourri of a match.
Mm.
It's like, it's got a bit of everything. It's just such a blend of different elements. Like, you've got small brawls. It's like, for the first time, I noticed that the timekeeper's table is in the weirdest spot I've ever seen a timekeeper's table at Korakuen. Just like near the entrance, diagonal opposite the ring post. It's like, why is it there? Probably because they had to fit as many people in as possible because that was a packed Korakuen. Mm. But just elements of that. You had the characters, the personality, the action, as I said, the misdirection. We have one other multi-person tag match to come on this project. And the only reason that got more nominations is because, spoiler, it's WWE, and spoiler, it was probably the peak of 2000s car crash wrestling because everyone tried to imitate it and no one came close. Mm. And by that, I mean TLC 2 at WrestleMania. But as I say, that is high spot car crash. This, now the detractors will probably call it like a bit dancey, a bit fast paced, but if you actually pay attention and look at it, it's just an incredible achievement. It is just so much fun to watch and just so enjoyable. This was the only match I've done on this project where I did my notes watch first because I remembered so much about it and so much is ingrained in my brain that it's like, I don't need to know what my opinion of this match is. I know what my opinion of this match is. Honestly, this is an absolute experience, and I don't say this for every match that we cover. If you've not seen it, just watch it. And it is on the Dragon Gate Network for free with English commentary, with context, with much sharper quality than has previously been around.
Mm.
So it's the perfect time to watch it.
Jay, did we miss anything out? Did we fuck anything up? Is there anything else you want to say about this match before we take it home?
This is probably going to be kind of a side tangent, but so in terms of like, so you talk about detractors saying that, you know, this is like a dance type of match. Mm. What are those people watching? What are those people like?
I often find like wrestlers who are detractive of this kind of style are the people who can't do this,
sure.
You know, and the fans are, I don't know, like other people who think all kind like everybody has to, if you get kicked in the leg, you have to hold it for the next 5 minutes. When we did Chicago Ridge, I talked about how the Dragon Gate guys, they're much smaller than even a lot of wrestlers in Japan. So they are your featherweight boxers who are hitting you with 100 little strikes rather than one big haymaker.
Mm-hmm.
I think it perfectly sits in with the style.
Interesting. Mm. I don't know. I mean, because I could see people in real time in 2003 saying that when that, you know, well, this is a dance, this is all of that.
Yeah.
But when so much of wrestling in 2023 is a derivative of this type of match, you know, if people are watching AEW and giving 5 stars to AEW 6-man tags every week and then coming back and saying this is a dance match.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Is it wrong to say it's the Cornette crowd?
Oh, he'd fucking hate this.
The Cornette crowd, the Russo crowd. The kind of, that have a very fixed idea, which is ironic because if you watch Midnight Express, they're not...
Oh, no, they were...
They're not far off.
Yeah, they were go, go, go.
My first favorite tag team. Is it, maybe this is the pro wrestling equivalent, you know, the, how they say that your favorite music is always going to be whatever you listened to when you lost your virginity?
Oh, man.
That's always going to be your favorite your favorite genre of music. Maybe this is like the wrestling equivalent of that.
Like the first TV show that really made you think and say, wow, or like the things that when you were young. Yeah, there's, and I think there is, and this project shows, there's a lot of 90s and 2000s WWF or stuff, which I think gets a bump because of that nostalgia element. Mm. And I mean, we have some younger, we have a surprisingly amount, I think, of younger listeners, I think Kieran said, like, there are...
Yeah, it's not all old farts like us.
Younger than I expected. And I wouldn't be surprised that many of them were like, their big introduction to like the world of Japanese wrestling is like the 2010s New Japan boom. Mm. And some of those matches have probably got that jump. So definitely, I think any hobby, the thing that you grew up with or the thing that was your gateway is for me, it's like...
WCW 1999.
I will not fight for Chronic that hard. I was going to say, for me, it's like, at best, I will have a second favorite author as a new author, because no one is ever going to top Terry Pratchett for me, because during my teens, that was the author that I read the most and that shaped me. And I think that is the nature of wrestling. But then you've got stuff like this, which is, it just connects, and you don't need to have that emotional connection just because it's hitting it from so many different angles and so many different elements. And it all comes together as a perfect, it's a patchwork blanket of magnificence.
Perfect. We can't say any better than that. So I am going to say, Jay, thank you so much for joining us today. The floor is yours to tell us where you can be found on the internet if you want to be found, what is coming up with Dragon Gate, all of that kind of thing.
You can find me at DragonGate.live. That is the Dragon Gate Network. We do English commentary for the monthly Cork and Hall shows, which include matches such as the one we talked about here. And also are all of the major shows. If basically, if there's like a Dreamgate title match, or if it's one of our five, now six major shows, we have English commentary for that. We actually do more English commentary than Japanese commentary in terms of our live broadcasts. We're the only Japanese promotion where you can say that.
Wow.
So go and sign up there. If you previously signed up for the network or previously tuned out from the network because of the fact that live shows were only available for 1 week, that has recently changed. The on-demand period has changed to a year. There is no worry about having to catch up if you miss a show during the first week. Or if you hear about a great match, such as Big Wash Shimizu versus Madoka Kikuta from 3 days ago. For example, if you hear about it and you want to sign up for the network and go and see it, it's going to be there now. So also you can subscribe, go to YouTube, you can subscribe to the official Dragon Gate YouTube. There are digests of from every house show. So Dragon Gate has the busiest schedule in Japan. We do 180 shows, give or take, per year. And so the 120 that are not on the network are available for free. Not the entire show, but usually two to three matches from each show is available for free on YouTube. So if you've never checked out Modern Dragon Gate and you want to get a feel for what it's like, you can go there, or you can go to the Dragon Gate Network YouTube, where match one from every live show is available for free in English or Japanese or available. So essentially that means every single Dragon Gate show has a free match available on YouTube. So if you want to come and check out what we're doing right now, you can go and do that, and then you can come and give us your money at DragonGate.life.
And if you're lucky, that free match will not have Punch Dominaga in it.
No, we try not to.
But make sure you always put him in match two. Okay.
He's in match two. You gotta pay money for Punch. don't give that away for free.
No, damn right. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations, and much more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, Threads, and Blue Sky, because I have become a fucking social media machine over the past few weeks out of necessity. We now also have a Discord, which is bit.ly/MustSeeMatchesDiscord, and you can come and have a chat in there. I am at Kieran Edits, and Mark is
at Monkey_Buckles.
Next week, it is another multi-man classic. And of course, we need to have another big hitting guest. It is Sting's Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance from War Games 1992. And sitting in the guest seat will be the man who has dished out more power slams than 1992 Ron Simmons, Finn Martin. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye. Be done.